Welcome to Last Games Night on Earth, a podcast where we discuss if you were given just one last games night, what would you wish for? My name is James, and this is the Dungeons & Flagons podcast. Are you ready for another episode of Last Games Night on Earth? Before we start, I just want to say a quick, massive thank you to everybody who's been listening and all the amazing support we've had. If you've followed the podcast, if you've shared it, if you've reviewed it, amazing. I'm absolutely blown away by everyone. So thank you for continuing to listen. This week, we have Chris with us, and he's going to be talking about his Dream Games Night. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Chris?
Indeed. Hello, I'm Chris, Christopher Dean, when I'm being really formal, which is basically when my name's on books and no time otherwise. I am the rarity of a full-time RPG game designer. I've got two published games, and I currently am working with Braincrack Games to freelance on some of their first published RPGs, as they do board games. And that's
awesome.
Me.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the podcast. Right, so where should we start? Should we start with your first game?
Indeed. Okay. So the thing with my first game night, I actually had a load of different like game ideas, and like some of my choices might surprise people because they're not mostly like games I play all of the time. I thought for me, if it was my very last game night on Earth, I would definitely want to play the games I like never get round to playing for whatever reason.
That's fair enough, yeah.
Choice number one is Once Upon a Time, which I've chosen because it's a game I don't get around to play because I don't possess it. A friend of mine has it, and I've played it at his a few times, but I haven't seen his friend since like before the horrors of lockdown. And I know that when I next see him, I'll be like, let's play Once Upon a Time, because it's a friend I know who's got it. It's a game I've like nearly bought many times, but I'm always like, Chris, you've got enough games. And I never get around. Or it's either Chris, you've got enough games, or I've decided I've not got enough money at the time or whatever. Like, I always regret it afterwards, not buying it. Like I saw it in the shop once. I was, Chris, why didn't you buy it? So yeah, Once Upon a Time, that is my first choice, which is a storytelling card game.
Cool. So that's by Richard Lambert, Andrew Rylestone, and James Wallace from Atlas.
Indeed.
So what do you like? You said that it was a storytelling game.
Yeah.
Do you want to give a quick rundown of how it works?
Yeah, so all the players, of course, get a bunch of cards. You get one player gets designated as like the storyteller to start off with. And basically what you do is you've got like your Tory storytelling cards, which have got like traditional fairy tale things on them. So like there's a Godzilla and there's like a giant and a troll and goats and shoes. All of it, basically you get like objects, which I think are called things, hilariously. And then you've got like characters and then like events. Basically you can put down one or more of these cards and then you have to start telling a story based around the cards that you play. So to start off with, it'll be very much like a fairy tale because storytelling cards. So yeah, events, items, characters, creatures, that kind of thing. You can place down like one or more of them and then you start telling a story around them. So the idea is that to start off with, it's probably going to sound like a fairly normal fairy tale because you've got fairy tale things on the cards. However, if you mention something that somebody else has got like as a card, you won't know what cards they've got. So for example, if you're like, and then there's a fireplace, and you start to tell a story about someone telling a story in your story around a fire, and someone's got, I've got a fire here, and they put down their card, say it says campfire or whatever, that counts as long as it's got something related to what you've said. Then they become the storyteller. And the idea is to kind of steal the story from the other players, which at this point, it then becomes madness pretty quick, because then people have got not only different cards that they're playing, but they're also, you've all got like a happily ever after card. And your idea is to play all of your other cards, all of your storytelling cards, and then you can finish with your happily ever after card. Now, the problem I tend to have with this game is I get a bit overexcited and I'm telling a story to go towards my happily ever after. And then I try and tie up with my happily ever after, forgetting that I've still got cards in my hand. So the trick of it is you've got to try and use everything, and sometimes you'll have the most, you know, they're overall not random because they're all fairy tale related cards, but in combination you'll have stuff that basically is riffing on all these different fairy tales, and then it just becomes face breaking hilarity across the table as everyone's trying to steal the story from each other and lead towards happily ever afters. Bear in mind, you can have and they fell in love. And then your characters on the table are like an ogre and an old woman. Then you've got to try and tell a story of having an ogre and an old woman fall in love while somebody else is trying to tell a story of how the old woman slays the ogre or whatever. So, yeah, and obviously the more other people tell the story, the more they're going to railroad whatever you were trying to do in your story. And it's just absolute madness that I love. And I feel it's a good way
sounds
to
really good. Tonight. Do you see it as like a competitive game, or do you see it more about trying to like come up with the best story as a group?
Yeah, I think really ultimately it's just a nice little framework for like a Baron Munchausen style game, because there's like actual literal Baron Munchausen rules, but that's also a game that I know, which is basically just tell a nonsense story and then other people can ask you questions about your nonsense story. So that is a game that when I used to drink, I used to play sometimes with role player friends, and that's good madness. So when I discovered Once Upon a Time, that was like after playing lots of Baron Munchausen, I was like, oh, this is good, because this is for like less confident people, gives them a bit more of a framework to tell the stories in, and otherwise just kind of gives a framework for more confident players as well, so they're not just talking over each other constantly, because you've got to have a card that matches with what they're saying somehow, which happens often enough, but not too often that it, you know, so it becomes a controlled chaos. But yeah, definitely for me, it's just fun to tell mad stories. Doesn't really matter if you win or not. There is that little competitive element, but mainly that just eggs on the storytelling, I think, because everyone's trying to go towards whatever their end goal is. But I think rather than trying to win, it's more about just provides a hilarious changes in direction, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it sounds really good. I've never played it myself. I'm not massively into like storytelling games. I tend to steer away from that sort of thing, mainly because whenever I feel like sometimes when I'm put on the spot, like so, like improv kind of stuff, like when I'm suddenly put on a spot, my mind just goes blank. But I like the idea of the like you're listening out for prompts, and you know you've got the cards giving you a framework to build a story with the people around the table. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've encountered a few different storytelling games. Like, I almost chose iDark Overlord, but that game is just a bit more random madness because you've got cards that let you interfere and stuff, but they don't really necessarily prompt the storytelling as much. I think Once Upon a Time is very good because, yeah, like you say, I feel it provides inner basis for people that maybe aren't so good at improving that they can still enjoy it because, like you say, they're listening out. And yeah, I think it does the job very well. But also, I'm very renowned that no matter what board game I play, I somehow find some way to turn it into a role-playing game. I'm the kind of guy who does games of Zombicide, and when people wade into a room and kill those zombies, I don't have to describe how the hell they do that with a frying pan or whatever. Like, I just can't help it. So, out the board games and card games I most love, they're generally kind of narrative in some way. Like, but I'll make anything a narrative game if I really want to, because it's just the way my brain works.
Excellent. I think it's a really good way to start a games night. So any more you want to say on Once Upon a Time?
I mean, I think that's it mainly. It's just definitely a game that, like I say, I need to, after I've had this podcast, I might end up buying it finally, because it's one of those games where I'm like, I should get to run this. That should be quite fun to run online, probably. I'd have to get some way around the cards somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be definitely
that's the
one
only problem, because everyone's got their own hand of cards.
It's definitely one that somebody could make a good online version.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you could easily make like a bot or something on Discord. Once Upon a Time. No, I like it. I like it a lot. It's probably one of those games. This podcast is going to end up costing me a fortune because so far I think there's been 4 or 5 games that I've been like, oh, I didn't know anything about this, but now I really want it. What do you want to talk about next? What's the next element of your games night?
Okay, well, I feel I should talk about the guests for the games night before we go to like more games, because that adds an extra level of hilarity to my game suggestions.
Go for it.
To it in a way, because I was thinking, who would I like to invite? Also, who are heroes in mind? But also, who would be fun with the games that I thought of. So my guests involves Resurrection from the Dead, sadly.
We can do that for you.
Yeah, with the very recent, fairly recently departed Stan Lee, and also hilariously Christopher Lee. I didn't deliberately pick two people with the same surname. They just happen to both be heroes of mine, like probably my biggest, and they were in life and continue to be so, both in terms of like inspiration. I mean, I love Christopher Lee because the man's just so multi-talented. I mean, I think everyone knows at this point his like kind of cool special forces background that he had, and he revealed yeah. when he was doing Lord of the Rings, and the fact that he could do Saruman and Dracula. And like, I mean, if you had somebody with the combined powers of Christopher Lee's characters, you'd be unstoppable. I mean, he's already got a Sith, vampire lords, and one of the most powerful mages in Middle-earth. So that's a regular conversation between one of my friends and mine. Who would win out of actors with powers of their characters?
Do you think he did the voice for the HeroQuest advert?
I did not know that.
Well, apparently he didn't. But go and after we've done the podcast, go and listen to the HeroQuest, the original HeroQuest advert. It is Christopher Lee. And I refuse to accept that it's
that's
not.
Amazing.
Well, apparently it isn't.
That's sad. But what other fun facts I do know about Christopher Lee is, firstly, he ended up doing narrations for one of my fave bands. They used to be called Rhapsody, but now they're known as Rhapsody of Fire for hilarious legal reasons. Apparently they got sued by the owners of the Rhapsody, was it program, I think? And they had to change their name to Rhapsody of Fire. They are like a power metal band, so they actually sing songs about fantasy and stuff, and it was one of the first.
Didn't he record his own like power metal album?
Yeah. So before that, he firstly did voiceovers for Rhapsody. This then, so like in between their metal tracks, you then have Upper Christopher Lee voice just writing tales about this random fantasy world that the guitarist of the band who writes all the songs does. And then this led him to do songs in one of the later albums. So he actually ended up singing duets with the Rhapsody band leader. But that is not all. He then did his own Christmas music album, but it was Christmas metal.
Wow.
And then he did, well, I say him then, this might not be in the right order, but this is all the things I remember. He also did an album that I've got, which is basically his own metal band where he sung entirely songs based around Charlemagne. So a heavy metal band about a historical period of France. And he did an entire album.
That's amazing.
Because his love of metal was actually genuine. It wasn't like he just got into it because of rap. So I think like they invited him to do the narrations, and then he was like, this is fantastic. I want to sing my own songs. And obviously, he's an amazing opera singer, but it turns out he can also sing metal really well.
Do you reckon he'd be pretty good at like creating a story for Once Upon a Time?
It would be fabulous. And I could just imagine his deep, booming voice as he like tells all his great stories of the princess. Mm, and the
has got a storyteller voice, hasn't he?
He does. He does. And then we have the other Lee, of course, Stan Lee, who is a massive, massive hero of mine. Predates Christopher Lee as a hero of mine because I have been into like comic books since about the age of 11 or 12. I kind of got into it via the 90s Marvel cartoon, so like the original X-Men and Spider-Man and stuff like that. Yeah, Stan Lee has just always been a massive hero. And I know he hadn't had anything directly to do with Marvel Comics for like a very, very, very long time, but I think he was so crucial in making Marvel so much better known because he's just such a bubbly person. I don't often feel it when celebrities die. Like, there's some celebrities I love the work of, but I rarely feel a personal connection. But when Stan Lee died, I was bummed for some time. I was just really bummed out by it. And I remember the first MCU movie I went to see after he died, and they had like the tribute at the start. I was almost in tears. Like, genuinely, my girlfriend and I are sitting there like forlorn, and I was just like, bye, Stan, bye. Every time he does a cameo, I'm like, I actually feel good about it now. When I see him do a cameo, it's like, yeah, he will continue to live on because he's just like everywhere. He's just so larger than life. Now, if Stanley was doing a storyline, storytelling game, he would, of course, just tell it the way Stanley always tells stories. He would probably introduce it as his favorite story ever. And he would probably declare Excelsior a lot. And I would just probably be in stitches. I could just imagine Stanley, because it seems like he's just forever locked in it. Up until his death, he was like forever locked in his 60s, 70s narrator style. That's what he always sounded like. So whenever he talked to anyone or was on anything. And I just love that idea, the idea of Christopher Lee and Stanley and trying to beat him at storytelling and failing. And I'd just be too busy laughing, I think. But that's generally my experience of Once Upon a Time.
That's beautiful, man.
So there we go.
So just the two guests, yeah?
I think Stanley and Christopher Lee, and then probably some mates of mine, because you know, there are people that I will like always game with forever. I would have to have the last game Nights on Earth, of course, with my girlfriend Ruth, who is very much into like really cutesy games in particular. She loves really cutesy, violent games like Unstable Unicorns and every other game that they've made. but also, she does dabble in role play a bit like that, and she could probably play some of the games I've got.
Excellent.
But I'd have to have her along anyway.
sounds like a great crowd to me. It does.
Yeah, and my housemate Joe, who I do lots of board games with and known forever, and my best mate Nave, we all used to live together, and our board game nights were, again, face-breakingly insane. I'd have a bunch of my dearest friends, and then also Christopher Lee and Stanley.
Yeah, I like that. They're really good guests. Well, Christopher Lee and Stanley. The others I've never met, so I can't comment. But I'm going to take your word that they're amazing people.
Indeed.
Excellent. What are you dragging out after Once Upon a Time?
Okay. So game number two is Nemesis.
The non-copyright infringing alien game.
I mean, they managed it. It is so good. It is like the best alien game. Just it somehow captures the tone of it like perfectly. Not just in the physical presentation of the game. I mean, the art is gorgeous. Like the art,
it does look like a real. I've not played this one, but it's on the list now. Yeah. Looking into it, it looks like a really well produced board game. Like all the minis look really cool. The art looks really cool. Like all the components look like they've really put some thought into it. I love the room tiles that you like flip over. I think it looks like a really well put together game. But how does it play, Chris?
So yeah, the thing with Nemesis is it is one of those games you need a few hours. Like you need like a good, well, depending, it can end pretty short actually. But if you manage to survive,
it can fuck you over.
It can mess you up pretty damn quick. Like I think we probably had a game that maybe just about reached an hour because like the ship exploded while we're all still on it.
Awesome.
Also, it can end quickly because depending on what people's objectives are, like somebody goes, "Screw you guys!" and fire themselves at the escape pod, and then you discover actually that was part of what they needed to do to win. But there's also a whole bunch of ways where everyone can win or fail. So it can go anywhere between an hour and 3 hours. But yeah, it is a really well-written book. Like it really moves you through the walls really well. So even though it's quite technical in some ways, I feel it's like, as long as it's basically one of those games where as long as you've got someone who knows how to kind of do the almost kind of like GM bits of like moving the aliens around and stuff,
yeah,
everyone else can just jump in quite happily. And that's part of the reason why I enjoy it, because I mostly leave my mate Joe to do the legwork. It's part of the reason why he needs to be in the game night, so I can actually enjoy playing the game, not have to worry about shuffling all the decks and that kind
of thing. I mean, we all have that one mate that just gets invited because they know how to read rules.
Indeed. Yeah. And so the way it works is like everyone has like it breaks up in like phases. So like every player gets like to do up to like two actions, and you've got like a deck of cards. So it's kind of not quite a deck. It's not like a deck builder. You get like a pretty small deck, but there's a little bit of variety in it, and you shuffle it. So sometimes you won't always quite have the abilities you want, but different cards give you different powers depending on what crew member you are. So you can be like the scientist who's really good at like studying the aliens and like controlling parts of the ship. You've got like an engineer who can like crawl through I love this. They're not called maintenance shafts. They're called technical corridors. This is one of the wonderful blips of this game, but you can tell it's been translated into English mostly perfectly. But there's just the odd little bit. Like, there's no typos. There's just the odd, delightful translation error. So technical corridors. It took us a while to go, oh, they mean maintenance shafts. Yeah, that makes sense if you look at the actual
word. I mean, it sounds pretty spacey, though.
It does. It does.
The toilet on the International Space Station, something like Baseman Waste Extraction Unit.
Sounds about right.
Something like that, instead of just toilet.
The engineer can basically hop around the ship by the technical corridors, which is kind of cool. You've got the soldier, who's like the only one who's going to stand a chance with an alien in their face, and so on. And yeah, you basically play up your cards. If you only take one action, then your turn then comes to an end. You can otherwise choose to pass or to choose to end your turn, but otherwise you can keep playing until you run out of cards. But to play cards, you'd have to discard other ones. So you have to like sacrifice certain abilities to get other ones. Some of your abilities are really basic and everyone's got them, but like there's not special cards for moving or anything. Like anyone can move and do like basic stuff. And then you've all got like special character sort of actions. You do all those phases, and then as you move around the ship, the most key thing is noise. So every time you move into a room, you don't have to like roll, and there's a bunch of different corridors connected to each room with different numbers. Once every corridor gets filled up with noise, you're screwed. So if every corridor around you is moving noise, if you move out that room, you will end up getting ambushed by an alien, because of course the more noise you make, the more likely they will come.
It sounds like when I'm trying to sneak into bed when my girlfriend's already asleep.
That's it, yeah. You can sneak into the bedroom once, but if you suddenly realise you have to go to the loo, then that, of course, increases the chances. When you come back in, you'll wake up.
I always do that. I always manage to sneak in and she's not awake, but then I realise I've forgotten like my phone in the front room, so I have to sneak out and behind her and say, ah!
Yeah,
she doesn't really sound like that.
Yeah. I make my girlfriend laugh with what I call the old man bladder, because I get into bed and almost 5 minutes later, I nearly always have to get up and go back to the loo, which is fine, except when she's like already asleep and then I come in after I've run a game or something and then I have to go to the loo and I'm like, oh no. So yeah, Nemesis is basically, yes, like the experience of waking up your girlfriend, if the girlfriend could bite your face off. I've never described Nemesis that way. I should probably never do so again. Hopefully.
That's Nemesis. Let's move on.
Weirdly apt. And yeah, basically, you move around the ship. Random events could occur when you go into rooms. So every tile, you turn it over and it'll be a different room. Different rooms have different functions. You won't always get the same rooms every time you play. There are certain rooms you will always get and certain ones are like variable. Different rooms have got different actions you can use. So if you find an alien corpse and get it into the laboratory, you can study the alien corpse and then we'll like work out their weaknesses. If you go into like the fire prevention chamber, you can then use it to lock other people in rooms. This is where we get to the real fun bit of Nemesis. This is described as a semi-cooperative game because every player has got two objectives. When the first alien appears, everyone then has to pick which of their objectives they're going for. Some of these objectives can be kill everyone or kill one person or get everyone to safety to Earth or get the ship to Mars so everyone can be studied with aliens in them, etc.
So do you like the semi cooperative, because obviously it seems like a fun game, but it also seems like quite a stressful game. And I know that some people with like semi cooperatives, they don't like the fact they don't like the idea that the like another element of stress is the fact that the people around the table, you don't necessarily know if they're on the same side as you.
So here's the thing, I mostly hate traitor games. So even though Nemesis is one of my favorite games ever, if there's games like Werewolf and Dominion, I don't like them at all because I cannot play them because everyone always thinks I'm the bad guy, whether I am or not. And I literally never, ever have been because those games are about trying to work out who's the traitor. Nemesis is not about trying to work out who's the traitor. Nemesis is about trying to complete your objectives. And sometimes everyone's objectives won't cross and sometimes they will line up and sometimes you'll have to help each other out anyway. So what I like about it is there's never always going to be someone screwing you over. Sometimes the group will have benevolent objectives, or maybe one player is trying to kill one other specific character, which means other characters might then try and defend you. And there are ways you can work out when people are acting sus. Because if someone goes out to check the engines, for example, you might want to then go and see if they sabotage the engines or not, if they moved any of the cards around. Because if the engines explode, everyone dies. So yeah, I think there's like the right amount of tension sort of there, but you're right. I mean, you got to play it with people that like that kind of game.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's easy enough to play it without treachery being like actually guaranteed. And half the time, you're not.
So really am I right in saying that there is like a fully co-op, aversion, like in the rules, you can just take out the...
There's so many extra stuff in it. So you can play it solo, you can play it as like a story campaign, you can play it fully cooperative. There's like loads of different alternative modes to play it, some that come with the main game and some that come with loads of stretch goals, because like the Kickstarter came with just like everything. Yeah, we've got like some of the stuff in the house I'm living in, and then there's a new Nemesis game, which my girlfriend and I have got everything Nemesis ever. It's part of the reason why my last game night on Earth is because my last chance to make sure I actually play the damn thing, because it is a good game, but yeah, it takes a while to like set it off and get it going and things. So
fair enough. I like the sound of it. You've sold it to me. So that's Nemesis by Adam Kawapinski,
something like that. Yeah,
it's by Adam Awaken Realms.
Yeah, easy to find. It's one of the biggest board game Kickstarters I think ever. It's they're stupidly massive. It did really well.
Awesome. I like it. I like it a lot. After we've played Nemesis, good idea to talk about where we're playing the board games. Where's your location for the game, for your last game's Night on Earth?
Okay, so I thought if it's the last game Night on Earth and I can choose anywhere, absolutely anywhere, I will, including fictional things, I would therefore choose the holodecks from Star Trek. Any holodeck will do, because they're all equally diverse. probably whichever holodeck is the least prone to problems, but I don't think that counts for any of them, because every Star Trek series has always got to have at least one holodeck disaster episode for every season of every single Star Trek series that there is. I'm pretty sure that's accurate. it's safer than using a transporter, so I'm going to go with it. The joy of the holodeck is you can have any environment you want.
What you have effectively done there is you've tried to cheat the last game's Night on Earth. Instead of picking a location, you've picked a room in which you can create any location. But we'll allow it, because we are a nice podcast host.
Indeed, as a role player, first and foremost, I feel that was my ultimate choice.
It would be cool playing a role-playing game on the holodeck of a spaceship and just being able to like change the environment around you to match the game. That would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, my mate Joe, who I keep mentioning, clearly I get on with him, together. He's the only person I've talked to
all the time.
He's the only person I've talked to. Contact. Gosh. Anyway, he makes a good point that basically they're all LARPers in Star Trek, because they all get so into the holodeck programs. They've all got their own costumes. They get fully into role. Oh, yes. They're all LARPers in space in Star Trek. That's what it is. I would love to actually run a normal game of Nemesis, but like be sat in the middle of like, you know, the control chamber of the ship or whatever, with creepy noises going on.
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
A noise token, and then there's just that sound. I tell you what, I used to be a lot better at my high-pitched alien screeches, but I've worn out my voice box after many years of running I Love the Core at conventions, which is Chris's own It's Totally Not Aliens game, which is another reason why I love Nemesis and why it's my number one choice. I thought, can't pick my own games, that will be too egotistical. I'll pick something that's very much in the wheelhouse. There we go. That's the joy of the holodeck.
No, I like it. It's a very good choice for a last game's Night on Earth.
Excellent.
So, what's your final game of the night, Chris? What are you pulling out after those two?
But as I mentioned a million times, I am first and foremost a role player, as much as I enjoy my board games, and I even dabble a little bit in skirmish games and things occasionally as well. But my final game has to be a role-playing game. And therefore, I feel I had to pick the game that was probably most instrumental in me becoming a game designer, Mutants and Masterminds, specifically the third edition, though I have ran every single edition of it because I love it so. And I find that every edition of the game has been a decent improvement.
Mutants and Masterminds by Steve Kenson. Is it Steve Kenson?
That's correct. Yeah.
By Green Ronin. Excellent. So it's like a superhero RPG, isn't it?
Yeah. So as the name indicates, it began as like a D20 system. So like back in the times of third edition, when fifth edition was a twinkle in our eyes, it was one of the only D20 games that I actually liked. Like, I used to play D&D and really enjoy D&D. And anytime I encountered another D20 game, I thought it was like atrocious, because D&D is so specifically its own thing. I was of the opinion you couldn't really make it work for anything else, and yet everyone tried. And obviously, they still kind of do now with 5th Ed. It's like the new thing of make everything work for 5th Ed because everybody plays it, or like a lot of people play it. And like, the perception is everyone plays it, to be more accurate. So Mutants and Masterminds was great because it did away with all the things that don't work for superheroes. So no classes. You can make whatever you want. It's a points-based building system, so you just have a whole bunch of points. You spend them to have whatever you want. I have had people play, one guy play an AI of a city, and basically the city was a battle station, and that was his character. He was playing a city. I've had a hive mind of insects that ate a body that was mutated, so they became mutated as well. So he played the hive mind inhabiting his previous character.
That's cool.
You can make anything with it, and even go outside of superheroes as well. Like, I've always wanted to try and do D&D with it, but I've not got around to it yet. But it's one of those things that I'm like, so I actually haven't played this game for like a good 6 years, and I just started playing it again this year to try and have a break from my own games. And it worked so wonderfully that my group kind of corralled me into GMing again after me playing several games. I will admit, it didn't take much influencing, but yeah, it also removes hit points. So instead of hit points, you have toughness saves. So if somebody gets hit, depending on how higher rank their power is, you basically add that to either 10 or 15. It's 15 if it's toughness based things, and all the other saves are 10, so they're a bit easier to save against, and basically that determines the difficulty check you've got to try and beat. The more you get beaten up, the more penalties you get on toughness until you eventually get knocked out if you get hit enough. And you can also become entirely immune to toughness, but that costs so many of your points. So you can really play anything. Like, you can even be indestructible, and it will still work because there's loads of things you'll suck at. And because the GM can create anything, it's basically one of those games that, of course, takes a GM who knows the character gen, like, in and out to kind of make sure that everyone's got one that works. But once you get around that, the actual gameplay is really very straightforward. And it has that from D&D. It has the D20 straightforwardness of just roll a 20 and add a number. But there's not loads of other dice, so it's just D20s. So for me, it's like the ultimate D20 system. And therefore, my tastes have moved far beyond D20 systems nowadays. But I still love Mutants and Masterminds, even though I like a lot of more narrative and crunch and kind of less crunchy games. I still really enjoy Mutants and Masterminds, apparently. So that's why I figured that'll be my choice, my final choice. The game that kind of got me into game design.
Awesome. So, obviously, like, because I've never played like a superhero RPG before. Does it not get a bit too, like, characters are a bit too strong, a bit like they can just basically walk into a fight and beat anything?
Well, the joy of Mutants and Masterminds is you just have like power levels. So there's still levels in it, but all the levels dictate is how many points you get and what your maximums are, so what totals you can have. So for example, like a traditional starting character in Mutants and Masterminds is power level 10. So 150 points. The idea is like you could be like the Avengers or Justice League when they started out, basically. But you can have much lower power level characters. So if you want to do like a street level, like Daredevil and the Defenders type group, then you just like make them power level 7 or 8. Like, I'm currently running an 80s cartoon game, so because they're 80s cartoon characters, they're power level 8, because 80s cartoon characters are nowhere near on the level of like Avengers, but they're also not totally sucky. Like, you know, a Thundercat is pretty like awesome, but not like that level of awesome. Like, their abilities are much thinner, and that works really well. Like, the tone works perfectly. What I love about it is yeah, there is no limits, but each character is defined to do a particular thing, so it's still kind of like you've got classics. Like, if you've got a character who's all about shooting laser beams, Cyclops style, then if they get punched, they're probably going to be naff and get taken out. Like, when you make those characters, you can then easily come up with things that can challenge them. Also, it means the sky is the limit. With comic books, you can kind of do anything. And that's that's really what I love about it. But my most important thing is, I kind of get annoyed with D&D nowadays because I don't think the characters kick enough ass for it to be enjoyable for me, especially at low levels. Your bonuses are so low and your abilities are so restricted. I kind of live for games where I can describe and do what I want. So I kind of design games that way. I mean, they're not all about superheroes, but like, yeah, I kind of like games where your abilities are less restricted. So that's why I like Mutants and Masterminds, because it's a D20 game that kind of doesn't weigh you down too much with what you can't do. It's basically a game about making sure all your players are kicking ass and therefore having fun. Whereas I think D&D can sometimes become a bit unsatisfying if you just sit there missing your attacks and there's not really a whole lot you can do other than stab things. Whereas in a superhero game, you can like leap through the air, pick up a truck and throw it at somebody. And if you miss, then you probably put a truck through a building. Cue heroic crisis! I feel it's just easier to tell exciting stories than it can be with D&D. Bear in mind, I GM'd it for like over 10 years, so I had plenty of love for the game. I feel like it just got to the point where I'm like, I've done everything I want to do with it now. Whereas with Mutants and Masterminds, I've never gotten bored because there is no genre limitation to comic books. There's just.
Do you reckon Stan Lee would enjoy playing it?
I think Stan Lee would be absolutely fantastic. He would probably just be himself with superpowers because he's done that a few times. Like,
are you playing or are you GMing at the last game?
I'm definitely playing. I think I would like Christopher Lee to be the GM because I think he would be, again, amazing because he would do all of the voices. He would
I can see him as a GM.
Voices GM, like epic narration, intricate descriptions of things, and I feel like he would also encourage everyone else to do that, because I like to be the kind of GM, as much as I do awesome descriptions, kind of feed other players as well and get them to come up with a cool thing, you know, like the Critical Role thing of roll a 20 and you get to do an awesome description. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you should get to do an awesome description every time you do absolutely anything, and if you suck, you can describe how you awfully suck. And yeah, so I think Christopher Lee would be like amazing as a GM.
Awesome.
And I think if you think superheroros are cool, you probably like Mutants and Masterminds. Like, as long as you've got a GM, I think it's like any RPG, you need to have a GM who knows what they're doing, and as long as you've got a GM that knows what they're doing and can make you characters to do what you want them to do, then yeah, you can have some real fun with some really out there concepts. And yeah, I think it's just one of those games that's like really encouraging and is designed to make all players awesome. Like if things go wrong, you get hero points, and then you can spend hero points to make things go right, which is, many games do similar things, but I think Mutants and Masterminds was one of the first ones I discovered that does that and does it really well.
Fair enough. Cool. So, what's next?
Okay, well, I feel as it is the last game night on Earth, we've got board game covered, we've got like a storytelling card game, and we've got a role-playing game, so we also need video games. This is required. Terrible at most video games, and yet I love them. I've always been terrible. I feel like I'm a bit better than I used to be now. Like, I can actually play some shooters, because hilariously like to play violent shooters with my girlfriend. That is part of our relationship. She's obsessed with like Halo and Gears of War, so we have played through all of the games over the last year. It's been part of our dealing with lockdown. I think we'd already played quite a few Halos, but I think we've played through every single Gears game since last year. So I would be having giant screen, probably multiple Xboxes with multiple giant screens, to basically play Gears of War with Christopher Lee and Stan Lee.
That sounds pretty cool. Do you know what? I quite like, after a few board games, my go-to is always to like cuddle around the Switch and play a nice relaxing game of Mario Kart. That's how I like to end my games night. So yeah, no video, nice video game to shout at the end of a games night. That sounds like a really good way of ending it to me.
Indeed, indeed.
Awesome. Anything else you'd like to add to make it perfect?
So, when it came to the music, I came up with an idea for music, and I thought, wait, that wouldn't really work for games night. That's just Chris saying what music he likes. But I'm going to mention it anyway. My idea for music would be to have live music performed by Blind Guardian, which I'm sure lots of people listening to this podcast won't know who they are unless they're really into like their power metal. Blind Guardian are like my favorite band ever. I have seen them, I think, twice live, and they've only come to this country like a total of three times, and I've seen them twice. And both times it was like their only gig in the entire country. So, of course, London. And the place was packed. And it was really great, not just because I love the music, but because all the fans were so nuts. They knew every word to every song. And Blind Guardian, again, sing lots of songs about like sci-fi and fantasy and history and stuff like that. They even sing the odd like biblical tale of like, they have like a weird range. They have some like really good sing-along songs. Some of them are like proper traditional, kind of more old school. Kind of because they were, I think, like very late 70s, like initially, so they've got a bit of a kind of like an old school vibe, but they also they still make song albums now, and they've got a really good range. And then some of their songs are just like fully kind of almost like, you know, tavern sing-along style songs, and I think they could just do some really great like music for exciting bits during the game. So like for Once Upon a Time, like pretty much most of their album output would probably suit good background music, especially some that, again, their lighter kind of sing-along songs going on in the background. Literally stuff like The Bard's Tale is one of their songs. I could imagine that being a really good background song. And then when we're doing Nemesis, I think they could do some kind of epic orchestral sci-fi metal going on in the background pretty
well
too.
That would be cool.
And then Meet Some Masterminds, again, you can have so many, very over-the-top theatrical music. I think the combination of their musical styles would suit my game night pretty well. Plus, I just love them, and I would probably love the idea of getting to play Xbox games with them afterwards once they've finished their live music.
I love it. Yeah, so in the corner of the holodeck, a little gig.
Indeed, indeed.
You could do some really good like stage pyrotechnics in a holodeck, couldn't you?
It's true, it's true. I guess the holodeck allows me to cheat how all the guests and bands work as well, because it just generates them on the holodeck. I hadn't even thought of that till now. I really have cheated, but I'm embracing it now by admitting it.
No worries. We'll allow it. Awesome. So, is that everything?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't really like massively cool go into night. Food or drink, because I can't drink alcohol anymore, so I don't get to drink anything fun anymore due to medical reasons. But not terrible medical reasons, just more of a, I can't drink anymore. Didn't do myself any damage. I think I'll make that clear. I'm not super picky when it comes to snacks. So yeah, I'm the weird person when it comes to game nights. Like other people bring snacks. I'm not really like a...
No, that's fair enough. Yeah. Cool. So we'll just do a quick overview. So Chris, your last games night on Earth was, the games were Once Upon a Time, followed by Nemesis, and ending with Mutants and Masterminds. And then you were going to have it all on the holodeck of a Star Trek spaceship. And you wanted... What else was it? Oh, yeah. And you wanted Chris Lee and Stanley as your guests. And you wanted... What was the band playing in the background?
Blind Guardian.
Blind Guardian playing tunes in the background. I think that's awesome. Cool. So that leaves us with the ABCD game. What are you having?
I'll go for C, whatever that is.
You've got a nerdy question.
Okay, cool.
It's a Star Trek question.
Oh, okay. I might have a chance. What... We'll see.
What saves Spock, Leonard Nimoy, from being permanently blinded by an intense beam of light in Operation Annihilate? Episode 29.
Oh, no, it's season one. That is Chris's gray area of Star Trek. I'm like a tier G plus person. Like tier G, DS9, Voyager, Discovery, and Lower Decks. I could answer questions probably on any of those. And not so good with the original series.
I've just finished watching Lower Decks. It's really good. I really enjoyed it.
It is. It's surprisingly Star Trek, despite what people say. I'm not like, yeah, it works. It works. Unfortunately, I have no idea.
If you knew the answer to that, get in touch with us at LGNOE podcast. I'm going to tell you the answer off air, okay. Chris. And then, okay. Right. Have you got anything you'd like to plug with us while we're here, Chris?
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm working on a bunch of stuff. There's nothing in specific for me to like plug at the moment, other than I guess where my games can be found. So I am on DriveThruRPG as Psychic Cactus Games. I currently have two games published on there. I Love the Core and Is It a Plane? I Love the Core is a sci-fi action horror game. You might be surprised to know, which is. Yes, a little bit aliens inspired. It's actually inspired by a ton of other things, though. Dog Soldiers, Starship Troopers, Predator. These are actually very, very, very informative influences on that game before I'd even seen Aliens. It kind of got turned a little bit more aliens by players of mine. And then there is It a Plane, which is, as far as I'm aware, the only role-playing game which involves drawing mechanics. So rather than rolling dice, when you get into epic comic book confrontations, you have to rapidly doodle in limited time. If people like the idea of these games, the PDFs are on there for free, and my books are print on demand, so you can pay for books if you get the PDF and you think it's not terrible. Otherwise, I'm on Psychic Cactus Games. I've got a community page on Facebook, as well as my own Psychic Cactus Games Facebook page, but the actual discussion group is called Psychic Cactus Games Community. So yeah, I also make games for Braincrack Games, but none of them have been finished yet. There is a game called The Out Here, which will hopefully be out at some point later. I'm not sure when. I can't give a time. And there's a top secret game. So yeah, I would give more about them if I could, but
no worries.
That's not. But yeah, there we go. That is me.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, Chris. I hope you had fun.
I did indeed. That was marvellous fun, actually. It was a nice way to break up my day, as I was in a writing frenzy early, and it was a good way to make me stop when you're like, hey, Chris, remember the podcast? Oh,
I'm glad you remembered to eat.
yes, indeed. So yeah, it was fantastic. Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
No worries. Thank you for coming on. Just one last thing to say. Play the intro, please. Oh, no, we've already done that. Play the outro.
Yeah.
As always, thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us about anything at all, find us on social media with @LGNOEpodcast or email us at lastgamesnightonearth@outlook.com. If you enjoyed it, please consider telling at least one person. It's the best way to help spread podcasts. And if you want to help support Dungeons & Flagons' events in the future and keep the podcast going, check out our Patreon by searching Dungeons & Flagons. I've been James, and this has been Last Games Night on Earth, a podcast by Dungeons & Flagons. Thank you.